You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
The Canadian International Development Agency, or CIDA, has long provided federal government funding for aid programs across the world. Recently, however, a program was introduced to not only fund private aid NGOs, but to fund their operations alongside those of Canadian mining companies operating in poor countries. In an article published by the Dominion magazine, Gwendolyn Schulman writes that the agreement marks a significant shift in how mining and politics mix. Gwendolyn Schulman is a co-host and co-founder of Amandla, which is Canada's longest-running African Affairs radio program. She is one of the authors of the article, Foreign Aid to Mining Firms, CIDA Teams Up with NGOs to Do Development Work at Mine Sites. And she joins me on the phone now. Good morning, Gwendolyn.
Hi.
So how will this new program work?
Well, basically, this was a program that was announced back in September. And what it is the CIDA has made money available to NGOs and mining corporations to work in partnership on various, quote-unquote, development projects. So it's funds released by the Canadian government for development purposes, but earmarked for a collaboration between certain leading Canadian NGOs and certain leading Canadian mining corporations.
And who exactly is getting the public money? Is it just the NGOs, or do the companies get the money as well?
Well, they essentially do. The money is not handed over specifically to the mining company. The money is made available for joint projects. If I understand correctly, I think the money goes to the NGO to run these projects, but only if they're working in collaboration with Canadian mining companies. Now, the mining companies also kick in a certain amount of money, as do the NGOs. So I could give you an example. For instance, Plan Canada has partnered with IAMGOLD to run a project in Burkina Faso. So the total budget that's been made available by CIDA for this is $5.7 million. Plan has kicked in $0.9 million of its own money, and IAMGOLD has kicked in another $1 million. So by far, CIDA is the greatest funder of this project, but the other two partners have also kicked in funds.
And what kinds of social issues are they dealing with that impact the communities that these mines are based in?
Well, basically, from what I can understand, the whole idea is that from the perspective of all three players, when Canadian mining companies go into communities, there are issues that arise, and from the Canadian mining perspective, the industry perspective, what they are arguing is that it's great to have NGOs on the ground to help them address whatever issues may arise around, for instance, the project that I just mentioned in Burkina Faso, it's around labor training, too. So to train people to work effectively within a mining economy. There's another project in Peru with Barrick Gold and World Vision where they are claiming that it's to increase the standard of living of families that are affected by mining operations. So it's kind of, the whole idea is to help foster this idea of the good corporate citizen. And how to do that? Well, the best way to do that would be to bring Canadian NGO expertise to allow the mining companies to be those good corporate citizens. That's kind of the official line, I think, from all three parties, is that this is the idea behind this initiative.
And what are the major criticisms that mining justice activists have towards these kinds of relationships?
Well, I think there's a couple of issues. I think that certainly the issue that I raised in my article that I wrote with Roberto is that it seriously compromises the NGO's ability to be independent voices in this process. We know there's plenty of evidence that the history of Canadian mining in South America and Africa and elsewhere in the world is really littered with a huge amount of environmental devastation, violation of human rights. It's not a good track record. It's not that all mining companies do that, but the track record is really grim. And NGOs people's ideas of NGOs is that they have a relatively autonomous voice, that they are able to bear witness to abuses that could be occurring in these communities where these mining companies are present. So one of the big concerns is that if they're accepting significant amount of money from the Canadian government to work with the mining companies, to what degree are they still going to be able to independently critique any kind of abuses that may be perpetrated by these mining companies, whether it's in that particular country or somewhere else in the world where Plan Canada or World Vision or WISC have other projects going? So will they become compromised by this? I think it's fair to assume that there's a high risk of that, not the least of which is that this is all going on in a context where there are shrinking aid dollars coming from the Canadian government. So there are all these NGOs out there who are competing for fewer and fewer funds. And I do need to point out, to be fair, a lot of Canadian NGOs would not touch this program with a 10-foot pole. Some have felt that they are justified in doing so. But there's less and less money available, and these NGOs are all trying to find this little bit of money that's left, and now the money apparently is being made available through this kind of partnership idea. So will they be able to say no to that money if after they've accepted it? For instance, if one of their partner mining companies does perpetrate an abuse, will the NGO have the ability to walk away from that money and say, no, we need to bear witness to the fact that there's bad business going on in this particular community, that the mining company in some way is either violating good rules of environmental practice or human rights? So that's a big concern, is the autonomy. I think another concern also is just that, well, I think a lot of Canadians are kind of shocked at the idea, the notion of development through resource extraction, given the history that what has been clear is that in countries with heavy foreign-dominated resource extraction, it's actually been a recipe for poverty.
How are these NGOs responding to these kinds of criticisms?
Well, they're definitely, certainly the NGO I spoke to, Chris Eaton of WISC Canada, and he was very, very defensive. First of all, it was very hard to get an NGO to talk to us about this. We did finally manage to get Chris Eaton to give us his time, and he was extremely defensive about it. He absolutely disagreed that it could in any way affect his organization's ability to be independent and clear-minded in their analysis of situations on the ground. And his argument is that, no, to the contrary, it is the role of the NGO to, I think his words were, nudge along good corporate practice and to help corporations be good corporate citizens. I think another criticism of that particular perspective, and it's certainly where I'm coming from in looking at all of this, is that Canadian mining companies that operate overseas are wholly unregulated by Canadian law. So whatever goes on in Peru or Burkina Faso or Tanzania, if there is any perceived violation of human rights or environmental malpractice, it's up to the host country to deal with that. There is nothing in Canada that you or I or anybody else can do about any violations taking place in those countries. And my argument back to the NGOs is, shouldn't we be working hard here in Canada to bring about some kind of regulation? And I think it's important to point out that this program emerged, this current program that we're talking about, emerged at the end of a very long process that was kicked off in the mid-2000s, where activists, churches, NGOs, industry, and government came together in a process called the National Roundtables on Corporate Responsibility and the Canadian Extractive Sector in Developing Countries. So it's a whole roundtable process where people were able to submit briefs proposing how to make Canada's mining corporations more accountable in their activities overseas. And during that exercise, it became very clear that a lot of Canadians felt very strongly that Canadian mining companies should be regulated, that there should be Canadian legislation that regulates their activities, that there should be an independent monitoring process that allows an agency to go and observe operations on the ground, which is not the case now. In fact, it's incredibly difficult to access a lot of these mining sites. So this process was going on. It was a broad-based pan-Canadian exercise. And the report that was issued in 2007, although quite watered down because it had required an enormous amount of compromise and discussion with industry and government and all of the players, still at the end of that did call for some level of Canadian legislation of mining operations overseas and an independent monitoring process. That report ended up being shelved by the government, so it never came to see the day. But what was important was that during that process, certain NGOs and mining companies withdrew from the process or were never part of that process and set up a parallel process called the Devonshire Initiative. And it is out of that process that this new corporate social responsibility initiative funded by CETA has emerged. And what that tells me is that this is all about circumventing any form of regulation of the Canadian mining industry. And I think that ultimately that is really what the big issue is here, is that the companies manage to circumvent regulation, and cherry on the top, who gets to pay for their corporate social responsibility projects that makes them look like they're doing good in these communities? You and me, the Canadian taxpayers.
What would an alternative strategy for CETA look like?
Well, I actually think it sort of falls more under the envelope of foreign affairs. This is not really about development money. What I see this about is our Canadian foreign policy and how we interact and trade with other countries, and particularly countries in the third world, that our business investment in these countries has to be governed by certain principles of human rights and environmental justice. And so I really think that that's what I would like to see. I don't think CETA should be in the business at all of dealing with the Canadian mining sector. It's a political issue. I think it needs to be resolved in Canada. It's not development projects over in Peru or Tanzania that's going to really address the political issue of how our companies invest in foreign countries and what their behavior is. Those are standards that need to be established here through political action.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your interest.
I've been speaking with Gwendolyn Schulman. She is co-host and co-founder of Amandla, which is Canada's longest-running African Affairs radio program.